Welcome to PsychPearl's podcast with Psychiatric Times, the voice of psychiatry. We are honored to host the Breakthrough Session, a podcast by the Department of Psychiatry at Columbia University. We invite you to check out our other podcasts with experts in the field of mental health. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Columbia University's Department of Psychiatry podcast, the Breakthrough Session. I'm Dr. Jen Sotsky.
And I'm Dr. Angela Coombs.
And today we have a very special guest. Dr. Coombs, do you want to introduce her?
We have the pleasure of welcoming Dr. Anne-Marie Albano, an anxiety expert and director of the Columbia University Anxiety and Related Disorders Clinic, otherwise known as QCARD. So welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yes. So questions we get all the time from both loved ones as well as people seeking out treatment with us professionally is it normal to be this anxious? And I think this is a really good question because in a world where there's a lot to be anxious about, people are sort of grappling with, is this a range of normal or what I should consider to be normal?
Well, yes, that's the number one question people come in with. And also they come in with saying, I don't want to have any anxiety. I shouldn't have any anxiety. So let's start from just basically anxiety is normal. And when things are going on in the world, when things are going on in your life, and things going on in your life is everything from changing from college to grad school or starting a new relationship, these things trigger anxiety. And then lay on top of it politics, climate, just what's good, day-to-day work stress. Sure, anxiety has to be there because it alerts us to do things and take care of things for ourselves.
I'm getting anxious even thinking about all those things.
We get anxious when our superiors call on us, yep. Right? We get anxious when we're talking on a radio show like this or such.
Exactly, yeah, doing this podcast.
Sure. So anxiety is normal. The question has been now for the last several years, is it increasing? And especially, is it increasing in young people, you know, millennials and those who are just heading into the world because the world's changed. Jobs aren't available in the way they used to be. Technology puts a lot of advantages to folks, but also adds a lot of different stressors. There's a lot of things that they have to do differently nowadays than in the past. You just don't walk into the world and there you go. Anxiety is increasing. That doesn't mean anxiety disorders are increasing.
Yeah. Though. So I appreciate that distinction.
Yeah, this is something I run into with patients, but also family, friends, just kind of navigating at what level does anxiety become an anxiety disorder? And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that, sort of how to recognize that.
That's a very good question. And that is something we want to educate people on because we have to think about what our thresholds are. Anxiety, when it's there, should motivate us. But I want people to think in terms of, one, does it stick around longer than it should for any given situation? Stress at work, stress in college classes, stress in your relationships. Is it there more than it needs to be? Does it impair the way you're functioning and result in you withdrawing and avoiding and making excuses and dropping out and, you know, getting really like into an avoidance mode in such a way that you're not taking care of things and you're missing out on things? You're turning down offers or you're missing and turning down classes that you'd want to take and so forth. Does it cause you to have a lot of physical complaints, right? Are you not sleeping? Are you not concentrating? Aches and pains all over the place, headaches, stomach aches, and so forth. And really, is it just sticking? Is it sticking? Because when that's happening, we look at that interference in functioning, distress, and it's staying around, then we may be talking about a disorder.
So it can be really tricky, I think, for people who are experiencing it to know when is it time to seek out actual professional support. You know, anxiety is one of those sort of insidious things that once it starts to really percolate to the surface or starts to get in the way, it can still feel like, well, let me just manage this on my own or let me manage this within my current community or supports. So I'm wondering if you can sort of give some direction around when it's both useful to seek professional support and also particularly thinking about psychiatric support or medication management or combined treatment.
Yes. Well, you know, the good news that people should know is that anxiety disorders are highly treatable. Mm-hmm. They are. Now, this may mean, though, that you're always vulnerable to anxiety or to depression, let's say, if you suffer with, have suffered with depression. But getting treatment then can help really manage things and help you get back into your life in a way that you want to be. So then the first thing to do is to take stock. Are you hearing from other people? Why are you so crouchy? Why aren't you ever doing things anymore? Why are you so this, that, or the other? If you're hearing that, you need to sit back and really take an honest, genuine look at yourself. What have you been doing? What's happening? How are things messing up? What's causing that? What are you afraid of, right? And if you are avoiding things and if you are in distress, let's seek help, right? And so depending upon how severe it may be, I think the first place you could talk to your family physician, you know, your general practitioner and get some advice. Who can they refer you to? Be it psychiatrist or psychologist or social worker who works in what we call evidence-based ways. And you guys know this. Right? What really has been proven to be helpful for the type of anxiety you might be experiencing? Right. Okay. And get referrals then to go seek help.
I'm just thinking, you know, sometimes people are in situations, often they are, like you mentioned, coming into college, starting a new job, that are very anxiety provoking. And how can you tell if what you're experiencing is related to that situation? Versus something about yourself, and how do you sort of navigate that? Like, you know, people will say, like you said before, we live in a very anxiety provoking world. There are so many stressors around. How can you not be anxious?
Well, see, that's a good observation too. And I think what we look at is what's the interaction. So each individual, look, we're all born with Achilles heels of some sort. I know what mine is, you know, what they are. Many of them. And, you know, I've had anxiety as a kid and stuff. So we have to look at what are our Achilles heels and know how to take care of ourselves when we are approaching what will be stressful situations. You can't take a class without stressing out about a test. You can't start a new job without worrying about fitting in. I mean, that's normal. That's normal stuff. So it's about really reframing that, seeking consultation and help locally with friends and family or your mentors or support, and then moving it into the more medical counselor, psychiatry realm as you need to. That is a strength. We need to own help seeking as a strength, and not that you have to be an island and you have to be this person who handles it all, because that's just not realistic.
See, I love that so much, and I'm really grateful for you to say that. I think, you know, it's tricky for folks that once they get to the point of recognizing, okay, wait, this might be like a little bit of a chronic vulnerability. It doesn't mean that I have to feel the exact way I feel right now, you know, down the line, but I can see and understand maybe what I might be vulnerable to experiencing. And I'm thinking for that particular kind of person who recognizes that, how would you recommend sort of them to think about what their treatment can look like? So, for example, we talk about medications, and somebody might find that medication is very effective for them. Mm-hmm. The thought about being on medications indefinitely can be intimidating for some people. So I wanted to hear what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things, now, as I'm a psychologist, so I want whoever's listening to this to understand, I'm not a prescriber. So I'm really coming at this from experience with working with research, in research on what works for anxiety in adults and kids, medication, combination of medication and therapy, or therapy alone. Your decision of what you pursue is an individual decision. It is up to the person. And when it comes to families, it's a family decision for parents of younger kids. And at the same time, it needs to be made in consultation with a trusted professional, someone that you can really pour it out to, and they'll listen to you to help you make the decision based on, for the level of disability, so to speak, or how messed up things are for you. I mean, if I have kids, I'm working with a lot of young adults who don't leave home. They're not in college. They're not dating and hanging out. They're not going to, you know, to parties all night. Like, they are at home on the couch all day long. And so we have to have this real heart to heart about how to unblock you from being so compromised. And for many of those kids, as much as they or their family didn't want to think about medication, the combination of medication and psychotherapy, and for anxiety, it's cognitive behavioral therapy, that's the best way to go. Now, to your point, I don't think we need to think about being on medicine for the long term, or for the length of your life, or being in therapy for the length of your life. It's what's going to help you, and then how do you make use of your psychiatrist over time? Like, you know, and either, you know, go up and ramp up the therapy or the medicine, or ramp it down when you can. But again, it's your relationship with the doctors you're working with, being genuine and honest about it and having someone you trust.
So let's say, you know, anxiety from my experience with patients and just outside of, you know, my professional life, it does seem to be kind of a, what we call in medicine, relapsing, remitting, which means it comes and goes. And often if you have it at some point, you may get it again in the future. For people who experience anxiety, does this mean that can they still live a fulfilling life? Is this going to limit them? Can they not? Let's say you have a college student who wants to, I don't know, become a lawyer or do some kind of high stress profession. Should they not do that because it'll make their anxiety worse?
Absolutely not. Let me tell you what I consider success in my career. Success are the individuals who I worked with when they were 8, 9, 10, 11 years of age, and we worked with their anxiety disorders that they had then. And I'll tell you, they are now in their late 20s, and they are transitioning from college to law school or med school or into a workforce or a relationship. And they're calling because they know they're going to be challenged. And so with the therapy that we've done, the cognitive behavioral therapy, you have different challenges at different ages of life. And you hope to. I have a new challenge. I've become a grandmother. I can't believe I just said that.
Congrats.
Just saying that causes anxiety. But there's and love and a lot of wonder with it. So the thing of it is, you get yourself ready for it. Mm-hmm. So if you know you have these challenges, you can prepare for what the next steps are. And you can and should be able to take law school or whatever it is, you know, take it on, like, you know, and really make the best of it and have a fulfilled life. And I love it when patients come back because they know, and then they could slide into these things with much more ease and a lot of happiness and satisfaction.
So I'm hearing that it's, you don't have to, and nor should you limit yourself just
absolutely
because you
not.
Have anxiety.
That's right.
And that, you know, pursuing all the goals that you want to pursue is really what you should do. And rather feeling like I'm going to be sort of disabled or debilitated because I experience this.
You know what? I recommend that especially people in their 20s read Andrea Peterson's book on her experience with anxiety and Scott Strassel. The two of them have written really wonderful books about, and they struggled differently with anxiety, and in especially their early 20s and such. And but it gives you good insights into the fact that you push and you push and you take it on, and they have wonderful, successful careers as writers and journalists. And so, and that's across the board in many people, in many professions.
Right. People sort of need examples of what that's like. Because I think that part of the challenge, and we're kind of talking around it too, is there's the stigma as it relates. You know, people have their own lived experience and may not be sharing fully about what it's like, their inner world and their internal experience of anxiety as they sort of navigate.
Well, I think hopefully that's changing. I think my generation, unfortunately, and older and a little bit younger than us, stigma was big. And so a lot of families especially hid these things. But I have to say, my young kids who come into our clinic at Columbia, you know, it's like, hey, doc, can I have my appointment on this day because my friend from school comes at the same time? We want to come together. And it's like kids are much more open to understanding mental health is something they want to aspire to and own. And it's not something to be ashamed about if you're having struggles in places.
I mean, it's interesting you say that because I think that sometimes you read these articles about the anxiety generation and it has a certain tone to it. But I think what it's like to actually take full ownership of your entire health and feel empowered to meet your needs is a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. Yeah, very much so. I mean, I'm watching now Kevin Love, the basketball player, who's very vocal about his anxiety. What a great person for people to look at who are in their 20s and such. You know, there's plenty of great examples out there of people, I think, that people of all ages can relate to.
Yeah, I've also noticed there's this shift from being self-reliant, that being sort of what you aspire to actually help seeking, like you said, is now considered part of being a strong and intelligent and sort of successful person. So
Exactly.
It's good to see that.
There's courage in that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of validation when you seek help. And also then you get the help you need.
Is there, you know, what would you say are sort of the main barriers in the current work that you do now to people really getting the care that they need?
We don't have enough evidence-based care out there in the communities where we need to have them. Community mental health centers in small towns, rural areas. Well, I even have to say in the wait lists, and you know, we all have these wait lists and such. Yeah. So we have to be training the mental health workforce, social workers, counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, in the evidence-based care, and we've got to make treatment available where kids will go get it and people will get it. College campuses, schools, community centers, in primary care offices. We've got to move mental health care, even in businesses. Mm-hmm. There should be, in your human resources division, there should be mental health care there for people to go and not to be ashamed to be walking through that doors if you are the CEO. Because you need help for your generalized anxiety disorder. It's okay. We know you guys worry. Come in, speak up, get the help you need.
Yeah. Also, you know, we know that anxiety and avoidance go hand in hand. So I wonder, and that sort of in mind, what are your thoughts about the digital therapies and the digital options for addressing anxiety?
That is fantastic. That's a great question. And I'm guilty of developing virtual reality in this way, you know, to extend our reach. So I think it's wonderful. There's a lot of good work being done showing that telehealth, just in general, but then also transporting treatments where the therapist is talking to the patient in a bug in the ear kind of way, who's working with their child, let's say, who has anxiety, or talking to a parent who's working with a child. So there's many different ways that telehealth has been helpful. Apps are helpful to a degree, but at the degree to which the person uses them. So what we have to do is build into any of the technology accountability in the sense that the clinician, the therapist, and the patient are seeing what's happening with the technology, and the technology is feeding back to the therapist. Just using technology on its own, these like self-help programs and such, I think is very good for people with milder anxieties or mild depressions to help them for a while, and maybe it turns them around. But they should still seek help in case they need to really sit down face to face, because when you have a real diagnosis, you need another person to help you with it. Mm-hmm. And a trained professional is the person to go to.
I'm also thinking, what if you're, let's say you have a family member or a close friend who seems like they're suffering from anxiety, but they're not seeking help? How would you recommend you kind of help that person?
That's the number one. I'll tell you, our number one question is from parents who call us about, what do I do about my 20 or 30 year old and such child? Or, and then we also hear about youth who come in about their parents. And, you know, you can lead a horse to water. But the thing of it is, you've got to be non-judgmental. You don't want to approach them saying, you're anxious or you're just sitting at home. You've got to just say, let me listen to you. And you've got to be willing to hear them and not be telling them what to do, but to make suggestions and say, what if I went with you? That we just try out this person or that person that I might have heard from or heard about. And there are great resources online. We have our Columbia Psychiatry, you know, homepage, and a lot of education there. There's also groups like the Anxiety and Depression Association of America that has a lot of good things for parents and for interested persons to think about. And materials to give to folks. And this may also be is helping a person get online to at least get started. Because some of the psychoeducation with the technologies that are out there is a place for someone to start to get motivated to think about what they need and then reach out.
I have one more question, because this, you know, this comes up for me too. What if the person seems
not
like...
for anything? You got a lot of what if questions, and that's well, a trigger for me.
Oh,
what
my
if
gosh.
Is like that characterizes generalized
yes.
worry. Sorry,
yes. I'm a worrier in some ways. But if the person in your life that you're trying to help, what if you anticipate that they might be kind of upset that you're approaching them saying, like you said, you have anxiety, you have a problem, you need to fix this problem. Is there a way that you recommend approaching them, like a phrasing of how
yes.
to say that?
Well, exactly. That's why we don't want to say you are having anxiety, you are just mm-hmm. laying around doing nothing. It's more about approaching them and saying, tell me how you're doing. What have you been thinking about? How's your day been? You know, so a parent comes home and that youth has not gotten off the couch or come out of their room. There's going to be a time they're going to come out to get food or water or something. And, you know, to be open and ready to listen. And if they, and their response will be, what do you mean? I feel this. Well, you don't understand. Help me understand. I just want to listen. Because it has to start with just opening it up for them to speak in any way they want, say what they want, and you not to judge it. If you listen, they'll come to you more and more, and then you could start, what might you think about doing? What do you, what, how can we help? To open it up, to put it a little bit on them. And they might come up with some ridiculous things in your mind, you know, I think it's just a vacation to a deserted island. Well, you know, let's think about that. What else? You know, but at least getting them to trust that you're not trying to manage them.
Dr. Albano, we thank you so much for joining us, but just thank you in general for your work. We haven't even given a full shout out to your involvement in training. You know, you do a lot with the, within the psychiatry residency program here and a lot elsewhere too, but just preparing the next generation of people to care for, you know, patients, to be able to do it in a certain kind of way. But I think what you speak to not only empowers us to show up in our life, in the lives of our patients in a certain kind of way, but also show up as human beings in a
thank
certain
you.
Kind of way for people out there. So thank you for your work.
Thank you so much. Thank
Thanks.
You.
All right. Thank you for joining the Breakthrough Session. We will see you next time.